This is the fourth week we've been talking about right intention. There are quite a few words I associated with right intention. I found commitment, resolve, aspiration, volition. Sometimes it's even called right thought. So I'm going to use these terms interchangeably. Right intention follows wise view in the wisdom segment of the Eightfold Path. And Philip says it's the bridge between our understanding and our thoughts, speech, and actions. It's a second of the eight folds of the phases of the path leading to Nibbana and the end of suffering. Wise view is based on our understanding of the first three noble truths, the understanding of suffering, the understanding of the causes of suffering, and the understanding of the cessation of suffering. Wise view leads to wise intentions, so suffering will be connected to a lot of our intentions. The Buddha says that right intention has three aims: to refrain from thoughts and feelings of ill will towards oneself and others, to refrain from actions that would harm oneself or others, and to cultivate renunciation or restraint. So why are these three intentions the ones that the Buddha asks us to focus on? It's because these three intentions are antidotes to the three primary poisons or defilements that cause so much suffering: greed, hatred, and delusion. The intention of renunciation leads to the ability to let go and live more simply, to be content with less, or as with the monastics, to be content with what is offered. The intention to refrain from thoughts of ill will is an antidote to hatred, anger, and aversion, and inclines the mind towards feelings of loving kindness and compassion. The intention of harmlessness leads to actions that increase the well-being and lessen the suffering of ourselves and others. So these are all very powerful and wonderful intentions. When I was thinking about what we've learned so far about right intention, I thought that although the Buddha tells us that there are three essential intentions, I still have the question of how to actually activate these intentions in thought, word, and deed. I can't just will all my thoughts to be kind, all my intentions to be harmless, or will myself to let go of all my attachments. I need some sub-intentions to help me grow into these overriding intentions. Philip Moffat, in his book, Dancing with Life. You got it. Yeah, Dancing with Life. In his book, Dancing with Life, says it's a process, and it's a process. These intentions, our process of dancing with life. You have to kind of, it's a process. To understand, we come into harmony and alignment, like you're dancing with a partner, with what we value most, and learn to be more mindful, right in the present moment. We ask ourselves, what do I understand in this moment about this situation? What do I want my thoughts, words, and actions to lead to? We need to cultivate moment-to-moment awareness of our intentions. It's the ground of the Eightfold Path we walk. So it's not a one-time and let go. Bhikkhu Bodhi says, we don't always follow through as we intend, and that's okay. So we need to have a attitude that we're learners still learning life's lessons. We can relax and learn again to be with the way it is. And sometimes we get do-overs. We can be compassionate with ourselves and begin again. Philip says this is a process of purification, and it requires revisiting our intentions over and over. Last week in his talk, Arv gave us 4 skillful means that the Buddha suggested for following through with our intentions. And I think they're worth reviewing. I know some of you stayed later last week and probably discussed them more, but I found these were really helpful. So the first one, and since we're at the end of our, we're getting to the end of the month and we're going to move on, we want to review how you actually put these intentions into practice. So the first one is replacement. We can have the intention to replace unwholesome thoughts, words, or deeds with wholesome ones. For example, Bhikkhu Bodhi calls this thought substitution, and he says thoughts of renunciation dislodge thoughts of desire, since contrary thoughts can't coexist. So that's one thing that we can try out. The second one I've labeled drawbacks and benefits. So we can look at the drawbacks of unwholesome thoughts, words, and deeds, and the benefits of wholesome thoughts, words, and deeds. We can look at where the unwholesome leads and where the wholesome leads. Before his enlightenment, the Buddha noticed that his thoughts seemed to fall into 2 categories. Some led to harm for self and others led away from harm and toward wisdom and nibbana. So it's a reflection on the drawbacks and the benefits, and it helps motivate us into action. The third one is called redirection. So we can, in this case, if you can't totally replace something that's you feel is unwholesome with the wholesome, you can start by gradually moving in that direction, away from the unwholesome, toward the wholesome. And the Buddha talks about inclining the mind in the direction of the Dhamma if we can't do the 180-degree turn. And the fourth way to put your intentions, your wholesome intentions, into action is to look at the causes of the unwholesome. We can reflect on the causes of the unwholesome thoughts, words, and deeds. And the Buddha feels that understanding is a key tool. Breaking habits of mind by an act of will without understanding doesn't work. Our founding teacher, Rodney Smith, says if we were to use willful efforts of the self, that effort would reawaken the conditioning of the self. So it's better to leave the self alone and allow wisdom to guide us. Over and over, the teachers say that changing our perspectives can unbind us. Bhikkhu Bodhi says it this way. When we investigate closely with keen attention, desire falls away by itself without need for struggle. And I know in my experience, when I really see a drawback of something, that my mind says, that's right, I'm just going to change. I see the drawback. So the understanding, there's no more struggle. And I imagine a lot of you have found this too. So we're nearing the end of our month exploring right intention, and I'm going to give some examples of what it can look like to follow through with one's intentions. And I'm going to start with an example from a role model, so we get a really good example of a successful following through of intention. And this is from last year's study of the paramis, and it's from the book Parami, Crossing the Floods by Ajahn Sucitto. And it's a story he told, which some of you may remember, but it really entranced me. And I thought of it when we were talking this month about right intention, because the parami of resolution is really like right intention. So, let's see here. So this, so hopefully these examples will help us think about the specific ways we've followed through with our intentions, as well as ways we might want to follow through in the future. And we can share our experiences after the talk and encourage each other to persevere. So this is Ajahn Suchito's example. He illustrates in this example the important connection between intention and wise view. He says when he sets intentions, he often thinks of his attachments, which make a lot of sense, and strong desire and clinging, craving are the root cause of suffering. He also thinks about his ultimate aspiration, enlightenment, which he says involves a shift in view from a more self-centered view to a more non-self view, and from a short-term view to a long-term view. So Ajahn Suchito uses wise view and his deepest values to direct his actions through the bridge of intention. In his example, he's just arrived in England from Thailand in winter with only lightweight robes and open-toed sandals. He has to walk 3 miles on alms rounds through the snow, and he's pretty uncomfortable. He notices that other monks have winter boots. His inner voice begins complaining. He has boots. Why don't I have boots? It isn't fair. Now, I can identify with this kind of reaction, and maybe some of you can too. Comparing mind is at work, looking at someone else and feeling they have more. Sometimes feeling they are more. And I feel, shouldn't be like this. It's a pretty clear example of selfing and attachment. Ajahn Suchito said he had to stand firm against what he called the petty voice in his head, so he made the resolve to be content with what was offered. His intention falls under the category of renunciation. It also probably falls under the category of goodwill, because he says he wants to stand firm against the voice in his head, which is full of resentful thoughts and envy. With respect to the list of the 4 skillful means that Arv gave us last week, it looks like Ajahn Suchito was motivated to follow through with his intention at first because of the drawback he saw in having to listen to the complaining voice in his head. But later, it was the benefit of letting go of his desire for the boots that seems to have been his strongest motivation. As he describes the whole experience, he says walking in his sandals in the snow was an opportunity. He said it was an opportunity to be here with that, and that is the walking in the snow with sandals. He continued saying, I could witness what came up and let it all pass. It wouldn't kill me. He went on to say that the experience was more useful than having boots, because his true dedication was to emptying out desire, not to warm, dry feet. Ajahn Suchito was aware of the dukkha of desire, and that the moment desire springs up, it creates in us a sense of lack, the pain of want. Usually we go after the object of our desire, but he knew that if he could experience the truth of the dukkha rather than the momentary pleasure, he would have a more long-term contentment in the form of freedom. So Ajahn Suchito's follow-through was successful. The fact that his intention was connected to wise view and to his deepest values was a key to the success. Right intention requires discernment and coming back to the intention more than once. Later, Ajahn Sucita said that over time his intentions were less extreme. His intentions calmed and simplified, and he said now his intention is primarily, may this action or thought be for my welfare, the welfare of others, and lead to peace. What impressed me about Ajahn Sucita's example was how he stayed with the wanting. He stayed with the feeling through the vortex, he said, to the emptying out. In my experience, you really don't know it won't kill you until you stay with it. There are places I don't go in my mind or with my feelings or even in situations like social situations because to my ego, it feels like it would be death. The ego can be pretty dramatic. I was reflecting on why I remembered this story from last year and how it might help me with following through with my own intentions. I thought that I want to be able to go to the edges of what is comfortable for me. I want to be able to tolerate the discomfort so that I can understand it better, so that I can feel that I don't have to avoid it or fix it. And I thought that in order to get to that place, I need to learn to relax more. Three teachers I respect a lot include relaxation as one of their essential practice steps. For our founder, Rodney Smith, his instruction was, relax, observe, allow. With Gregory Kramer's Insight Dialogue, which I practiced for about 10 years, it was pause, relax, open. And recently I learned that the Burmese monk Utejaniya emphasizes the value of relaxation too. It's his first practice step. So I began to think about how I would follow through with my intention to relax and my intention to stay with uncomfortable thoughts, feelings, and situations. I've had a kind of fuzzy intention along these lines for a while, but I could see that what Philip said was true. I needed to revisit these intentions to try them out and see where they led. One of the benefits of relaxation is that it helps you notice tension and investigate. You're better able to notice contraction and clinging, which cause so much suffering. I spent some time one day this week with the intention to notice when I was relaxed, when I wasn't relaxed. And one example that I noticed right away was a tension around a feeling of envy that was subtle, and I don't think I would have noticed it if I hadn't been paying attention. It was not comfortable, and I felt a contraction in my throat. So I decided to try out my intention to stay with what was uncomfortable and find out more about it. I turned on my insight timer, and I started to meditate with that feeling of envy. And not long into that short 5 minutes, I wanted a cup of coffee. I could just feel the discomfort. Wouldn't it be nice to get a cup of coffee? So it was very clear to me, this is an uncomfortable feeling and I would rather avoid it. And probably when I don't pay attention, I do. So that's just a small noticing, but and it was only 5 minutes, so it's not long enough to learn much. But to me, it was a sample of my direct experience, and it made me think more about the importance of relaxation in my life. I decided that I would have the intention to explore relaxation with the hypothesis that it is to be valued for its own sake. It just feels good. For the potential it has to integrate body and mind, to support qualities like letting go and patience, and countering unwholesome qualities like aversion. I also decided to notice and add more opportunities for relaxing in my day. More meditation, qigong, opportunities for walking in nature, more attention to subtle moments of relaxation and its benefits, so that I see the value of relaxation, even in its subtlety, more attention to subtle moments of tension and their drawbacks, and more noticing of the desire, the wanting a distraction away from tension, and specifically letting go of the pleasures of my to-do list. I see that as a real a distraction for me in seeing what's true and staying with what is unpleasant and uncomfortable. So my hypothesis is that if I cultivate the value of relaxation during my day, I will notice bodily and mental tension more, and I can ask compassionately, what's this about? Is it necessary? I can become curious about tension, moving toward it with acceptance instead of being of aversion. So on the one hand, staying with it and understanding it. On the other hand, cultivating its wholesome opposite, relaxation. So I would like to invite us at this time to think about the three categories of intention. So that would be renunciation or restraint, thoughts of ill will, or harmful actions. And the thoughts and actions could be towards someone else, others, or to yourself. And pick one of those categories. Think about maybe intentions you already have, or maybe think about intentions that you'd like to work on. And then you can think about how a specific action, what would be an intention that would lead, would be Bridget's way to an action of some kind. It could be thought, word, or deed. That you feel would get you on the road towards renunciation, goodwill. So renunciation being letting go of desire, you know, we're going in a direction toward dealing with wanting, the suffering of wanting. That would be one area. And have you already done things in that area? Do you already have an intention? So it's really, really basically, I'm just thinking of choosing an intention based on the three categories. One intention, but be specific. You know, like I decided to work on relaxation. And then think of the four ways that Arv gave us. So that would be substituting something wholesome for the unwholesome, or just doing something that takes you in that direction. It's just gradual. Or thinking of the causes, just reflecting on it. What's causing this action that I just you know, this situation that I want to let go of, or I want to develop, cultivate. And if you can't remember that, just anything that has to do with intention is fine. I just think some of those ways of working with intention that are offered are really, you know, great ideas. So that's the prompt. And hopefully we can share about our experience and our aspirations with intention and learn from each other. Hello, everyone. Would anyone like to share? What went on in your rooms, what you discussed with your intentions? Oh, Suze, yeah, go ahead, unmute.
I want to thank you for your comment, letting go of the pleasure of my to-do list and how much I go to that to distract me from being with what is actually up. And my intention has to do with kind of similar to what you were talking about, of really being with the stuff that's up, the difficult stuff, and not going to something else. I have two major distractions, my to-do list and crossword puzzles. And, you know, just noticing first the desire to pick up the pencil and the newspaper instead of, and so I was going to also follow your lead and set a 5-minute insight timer thing and just say to myself, okay, you're just going to be with what's there. Just be there. That's all. And see what happens. So thank you for those good suggestions. I appreciate them.
Thank you, Suze. Anybody else have a story to share? We like hearing what's going on with you.
I will say in discussions that we had, it was a little bit of, a little bit of letting go, if you will, like, and also reclaiming some things from your past. So like, you know, certain things tied up with strong emotions of old relationships, if you will, and kind of, somewhat give yourself a little compassion for, you know, what you're going through, but then also, you know, kind of changing the thought process in terms of these old memories and whatnot and trying to reclaim these things that are more for yourself, if you will. I don't know, just kind of changing that thought process of the self-pity, the self-sadness, and just kind of like there was joy there in certain moments, certain things, and reclaiming them. That was very nice. So.
Yeah, that sounds really... like it has a lot of juice in it. There's a lot to work with.
Yeah, all those were really good thoughts from my co-member of my discussion group. So I do not want to take claim to those. So.
Yeah, great. Thank you for sharing, Jason. What else was going on out there that you can share with, let us learn from or appreciate?
I could share.
Yes, Marjorie, thank you.
I was talking about, I hadn't thought of it as a, you know, clear-cut intention, but realized that it really is an intention to be kind to myself, and particularly checking in with like a wounded little girl in me, who I found that if I don't do that, she will get attention, and in not very good ways, and ways that disturb my adult life. And so just trying to check in, you know, how are you doing in a meditation? How am I feeling? And is there anything that is up there? You know, just appreciating myself for being who I am, but with all of the stresses and everything going on and my anger at what's happening politically and all of that. That's more the adult part of me, but anyway, and having that practice frees up my rational mind for making wise decisions, and also frees me up for being more present with other people. So
thank you so much, Marjorie. Very sounds very worthwhile to me. We have a little more time. It's really nice to hear from you. Even little bits would be nice. Candace, thank you.
I loved your talk today, Lauren. It was really helpful. And I hadn't realized that this was actually an intention, but a little while ago, I noticed how mean my inner voice is, and that sometimes I vocalize that when I'm not intending to somebody else and coming across mean. So I decided to take this year-long class that's offered by IMS online on self-compassion. And it's been really very helpful. And one of the lovely things that is part of the kind of redirection, I think, is the suggestion that, well, if you know, you might just think about no ill will toward myself. Just start with that. You know, it's this little step. And that has really, it's helped me see that the meanness is it's not meant as ill will, but it comes across as ill will. And so it's somehow it's gotten through to me, and it's really helping. So sometimes, you know, just taking a class when you're realizing a problem can really be an intention that, you know, helps you replace and look at the benefits and drawbacks and redirection and the causes wow. And it felt kind of selfish at first, but it isn't at all.
Thank you for sharing that. Yeah, I was thinking, because when I started looking at my relaxation, I realized that 10 years, I don't know, longer than 10 years ago, 15 years ago, I started doing Qigong. And that has really helped me relax. So it's not, you know, like, sometimes we don't think, we don't know how wise some of our choices are, like you said, Candace, that they really are. And everything people have shared today, to me, sounds extremely wise and worthy of following. So thank you, everybody who shared. Does anybody else want to say anything? Okay, then we can move on and come to our closing. I do have the announcements.